Jesus was born in a small backward village. His parents were two peasants named Mary and Joseph. He was raised in Nazareth, where he received a Jewish education. When he was around 30 years of age, he developed a spiritual bond with a man named John, who baptized him in the Jordan River. Then Jesus went into the wilderness. He felt a communion with a power much greater than himself, and he was filled with enthusiasm, and he began a public ministry. People listened to Jesus with interest. He spoke to them in the villages, by the lakeside, in their homes. He gathered around him a small group of disciples, both women and men. Jesus was a healer. With sick people, he had a compassionate and charismatic presence, and he seemed to assist many of them back to health. Jesus was a prophet. He said in very blunt language that if the human race did not learn the law of love, there would be great gnashing of teeth. But if we did learn the way of love, then the kingdom of heaven would be among us here and now. Jesus was a theist, encouraging his followers to love God with all their heart, mind, and soul. Most importantly, from a Unitarian perspective, he was a teacher of wisdom. In teaching, he frequently used parables, such as the Good Samaritan or the Prodigal Son. Here are some of his core ethical teachings.
Blessed are the humble. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the peacemakers. You are the salt of the earth. Love your neighbor as yourself. Judge not, and you will not be judged. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Do not be so anxious about tomorrow. Today's troubles are sufficient for today. As you care for the least of those among you, you have cared for me. And this commandment I leave unto you, to love one another.
That hymn really expressed the feeling of the first couple years of the ministry of Jesus. It was hopeful, it was optimistic, it was based on some wonderful values and teachings that the people were responding to. But in the third year, a change befell Jesus. There were times of sadness and even times of anger. He had entered into the valley of the shadow of death, and that shadow had a definite location. Jerusalem. Jesus went to Jerusalem for Passover. He could have entered by a side gate quietly, but he was not a coward. He could have entered gallantly upon the shoulders of men, but he was not grandiose. He rode upon a donkey, a symbol of humility, through the main gate where the Roman officials would notice him. Jesus went to where all Jerusalem went, to the temple. Now the temple stood next door to the Roman garrison of soldiers. So here you had the oligarchy of the country, the high priests and the Roman colonial authorities and their army. Jesus found that the temple courtyard had become a marketplace. He wept. And then he declared, "My house is a house of prayer, and you have made it into a den of thieves." And with prophetic anger, he turned over the tables. I imagine that the poor rejoiced. Somebody was doing something. Somebody was speaking truth to power. Meanwhile, the temple priests and the Roman officers, the oligarchy, looked on quietly but ominously. Open arrest at that moment was out of the question. It could provoke a riot. There were quieter, more effective ways to deal with a disturber of the status quo. So day by day, Jesus taught his gospel, his good news, even in the precincts of the temple, while the crisis drew near. One member of his intimate group, Judas, grew impatient. For motives the world will never know with certainty, he betrayed to the authorities the secret retreat where Jesus could be arrested quietly at night. Jesus sensed what was coming. That night, a Passover meal night, he ate supper with his companions, and then he spoke mysteriously to them of sacrificing his life, his body and his blood for the good of the larger world. And then he washed their feet as a sign of humility and service. They left the walled city and went up into the Garden of Gethsemane. The shadow of death lay upon him, and he wept bitterly. The temple guard came to arrest him. Judas identified Jesus with a kiss. Jesus' disciples drew their swords, ready to defend their master, but he stopped them, saying, "All those who live by the sword shall die by the sword." Jesus was accused of blasphemy by a court of the high priests. With this charge against him, he was sent to the Roman governor. To Pontius Pilate, the important thing was to maintain Roman colonial authority and control. Jesus was upsetting the status quo, and anybody who did that was to be eliminated. There were hundreds of crucifixions a year. Pilate condemned Jesus to a crucifixion. With a crown of thorns upon his head, he carried his cross up a hill called Golgotha. Nailed upon it, he uttered these final words, "Abba, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Eli, my God, why have you forsaken me? I thirst. Into thy hands I commend my spirit." Following his death, his disciples wrapped him in cloth and placed him in a tomb. The tomb was a small cave carved in the side of a hill. A stone was rolled in front to cover the entrance, and his disciples went into hiding.
This reading is from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 16, verses 1 through 9. And when the Sabbath was past, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James, and Salome bought spices so they might go and anoint the body. And very early on the first day of the week, they went to the tomb when the sun had risen. And they were saying to one another, "Who will roll away the stone for us from the door of the tomb?" And looking up, they saw that the stone was rolled back. It was very large. Entering the tomb, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, dressed in a white robe, and they were amazed. And he said to them, "Do not be amazed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. But go tell his disciples and Peter that he is going before you to Galilee. There you will see him as he told you." And they went out and fled from the tomb, for trembling and astonishment had come to them. and Jesus appeared first to Mary Magdalene.
So, did Jesus rise from the dead? One Easter, I took a showing of hands in the Unitarian Universalist congregation in Brewster, Massachusetts. One-third believed that the spirit of Jesus had visited his followers. One-third thought the story was a legend, and one-third were undecided. I took the same vote at 10 o'clock at the family service. This is the approximate, I didn't count hands, but approximately 20% thought his spirit or something returned and talked to his followers. 40% thought it was totally a legend, and 40% were still making up their mind. Now, this freedom of belief is what I cherish about our tradition. You are completely free to have your own beliefs about the resurrection or any other theological question. Despite this wonderful diversity, there are some common conclusions we can affirm together about the Easter story. Jesus was a teacher, he was a healer, and he was a prophet. The ruling oligarchy of his day, who wanted to maintain their power, were threatened by his popularity. So they killed him. They killed lots of people. And they thought that this public, very public, and painful death would put an end to this gospel, this movement of human dignity for everybody, including all the peasants. But they were wrong. A human being can be imprisoned and murdered, but love, truth, and justice can never be killed. When Martin Luther King was assassinated, the dream of racial equality became stronger. When Aung San Suu Kyi was placed under house arrest for years by the military generals in Burma, her witness for democracy became brighter. When Nelson Mandela was in prison for 27 years, the cry for justice went around the world, and a new South Africa was born. Sometimes the human cruelty is so deep, it takes generations to overcome. Like the ending of slavery in America, still followed by the Jim Crow segregation and even racism continuing today. The Dalai Lama patiently understands the reality of a long, long, multi-generational struggle as he continues to non-violently oppose the Chinese oppression of Tibet. It is true that love and justice and the truth can be suppressed. Even for generations, it can be suppressed, but they can never be killed. So when Jesus was murdered and placed in a tomb, his gospel did not end. It continued to live to this very day, proclaiming that love is deeper than death, that truth crushed to earth will rise again, that the arc of human cruelty may be long, but justice will prevail. At the Unitarian Church of Sharon, we remember Jesus on Easter. Not because his blood saves us from our sin or any other theological dogma, but because, as our Unitarian sage Ralph Waldo Emerson put it, one person was true to what is inside of you and inside of me. We are all daughters and sons of the Holy. We remember Jesus because of his human example. In the last week of his life, he faced everything that we are frightened of. His friends deserted him. He endured physical pain. The crowd humiliated him. He was betrayed and branded a criminal. And he was frightened. In the Garden of Gethsemane, he wept bitter tears. And on the cross, he cried in agony, "My God, why have you forsaken me?" Yet he never surrendered his core values. Even on the cross, he was able to say, "Abba, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And God, into thy hands I trust my spirit." So his suffering did not make him cynical. His broken heart made him love more deeply. Hey, he could have chosen bitterness. He had plenty of reasons to be bitter. He could have chosen despair. He could have chosen revenge. Instead, he chose forgiveness and love. Forgiveness and love and justice. And this was not romantic idealism. It was real life. Because he bravely spoke truth to power. He challenged oppression openly. And he paid the ultimate price. And isn't that courage to affirm those core values worth remembering on Easter? Because, my friends, we are called to live those values in daily life. We are called to choose love, not cynicism. The world is getting more and more cynical. We are called to love. We are called to hope, not despair. We are called to kindness, not revenge. And we are called to do justice, not to have privilege over other human beings. So what a profound example he gave us of the values we need to live in daily life, of moral values lived right in the heat of suffering. This then is the Jesus that Unitarians have cherished for 500 years, a human being who shows us the enduring power of love, hope, and justice. And when life is most difficult, when our heart is most deeply broken, is when we are called to love the most deeply.